He blinks behind thick black glasses.
Maybe get tickets a little earlier next time, sweetie.
Don't call me sweetie, I snap.
Who called you sweetie?
Sage emerges through the crowd in the lobby, straightening her outfit, which today is a blue tutu dress. She looks like a deranged punk rock fairy. Not that that makes her out of place at a con.
Okay, so I couldn't get a space in the garage because the pumpkin wouldn't fit under the clearance. But I found this place with a meter around the corner and raided the register for quarters.
Operation Avoid a Parking Ticket is underway.
I think that's illegal,
says the guy at the booth.
So sexual harassment.
I try to give him a mind-melting glare, but nothing fazes this guy. Hell could be rising up around him, and he'd probably just think it was so last year sci-fi. He sighs.
Look, if you want to see what you can do about your stolen passes, go talk to the organizers. They're in the office over there.
He gestures toward the corner of the lobby.
Go bother them.
With a scowl, I turn on my heels, making my way to the offices.
I'll wait out here, I guess?
Sage calls behind me.
Have fun storming the castle!
I wave a hand over my head to signal that I heard her. This is ridiculous. Of all the years that my dad organized ExcelsiCon, he never would have hired a brat like that guy. At least there are other ways of getting into a con, and I know they aren't at capacity yet. They always leave a handful of badges unattended just in case someone important shows up, like the president or Tom Hiddleston. I reach the office door and peek inside the little window. A harried older woman is counting bills onto a desk. She looks familiar, but it takes a moment to remember.
Miss May!
I knock and wave through the window. She jumps at hearing her own name, spinning around to me in her rolly chair. She's in the regulation purple ExcelsiCon t-shirt and blue jeans, and I swear she hasn't changed her keds in the 10 years I've been gone. Her gray eyebrows scrunch together as if trying to place where she's seen my face before. I flash her the promise-sworn salute, and her eyebrows shoot up into her graying brown hairline.
Oh, my word! Danielle! She cries, jumping up from her chair. She rushes around the desk and throws her arms around me.
Danielle, you've grown so much! You look just like Robin, just like him! She echoes, holding me at arm's length.
Goodness, it's been, what, 6 years?
A little over, I reply. 7 years. How has it been that long? I wonder if she blames me, too. I pull a smile over my face.
And it's high time I came back, right?
Right as rain, she replies. Robin could never keep himself away. I knew you'd be around again.
Actually, Miss May, that's what I need to talk to you about. Suddenly the office door opens and slams against the knob with a bang. A tall, youngish guy, dark hair, swaggery walk, breezes past me.
I need to speak with the manager, he says, his voice icy. Please?
My mouth falls open. Because Holy Federation Prince, Batman, it's Darian effing Freeman. Miss May looks surprised.
Well, now, hold on a moment there.
A flustered-looking woman, his handler, I'm guessing, trips into the office after him and closes the door quietly.
Darian, it's okay.
Gail, it's not okay.
He turns back to Miss May.
I just need to talk to the director, please, that's all. I'm sure it's a big misunderstanding.
The director's out on the floor, Miss May says.
Excuse me. I interrupt him.
1 second, okay?
He barely glances over. I feel like I've just gone invisible. It's one thing to feel invisible at home, but this is my dad's con. I shouldn't feel invisible here. I won't feel invisible here.
Is there any way to get in touch with him? He says. Call him? Something?
Dare, you're running late to your panel, his handler pleads. Maybe we can get this straightened out later.
But the signing's right after the panel, he says, trying to reason with her.
I set my jaw. First, he gets cast to ruin Carmendor.
Then he has the indecency to show his abs on national television to sell Carmendor. And now he's barging into the office interrupting me and pretending I'm invisible? This is why I blog. There are things in this life that I can overlook. Catherine, the twins, the crap at the country club. But you don't mess with my Starfield.
Aren't you a little ungrateful? I say.
He finally glances over as if seeing me for the first time.
Oh, hello there, I think. Nice of you to finally notice.
I'm sorry, he says.
Aren't you, I enunciate, a little ungrateful?
I'm sorry, miss. I'm in a bit of a hurry.
And I'm not.
I fold my arms over my chest.
I was here first, and there's no reason for you to barge in here and throw a hissy fit because you can't sit your pretty butt down and sign for 30 minutes. That's disgraceful. In the grand scheme of life, what's 30 minutes to you?
I put my hands on my hips.
What's 30 minutes to make someone else's day pretty stellar?
His shoulders stiffen. You don't understand. You couldn't.
Couldn't I? I laugh. Give me your paycheck, and I'll sign for you.
He opens his mouth to retort, but then closes it again and turns back to Miss May.
Please, is there any way you can talk to your manager? We can work out a deal. I just don't want to sign.
Well, maybe you should sign,
I reply for Miss May, who's growing paler by the moment.
Maybe that's exactly what you should do, Darian Freeman. Maybe you should have realized that being Carmendor is more than just putting on a pretty face. It's a good line, because I happen to be quoting directly from my blog post. And when his gaze hardens into a glare, I realize he must recognize it. Well, good. You're just a spoiled star like all the rest of them, I add, waving my hand toward the door. So why don't you work for once and go sign some autographs? It's the least you can do. If you call yourself Carmendor.
His handler, bless her, she looks overworked and underpaid in those terribly old sneakers, puts a hand to her mouth to stifle a gasp. Darian Freeman faces me for the first time. I kind of see the allure. He's beautiful in person, especially with the scar and those eyes. But his personality is the biggest turnoff I've ever had. He's definitely been working out for Starfield. I don't remember him looking so, imposing in Seaside Cove. He folds his arms over his chest, shoulders straining his t-shirt.
You're that blogger, aren't you? The one who hates me.
I don't hate you.
Then what's your beef?
I stand taller, which, next to Darian, is not very tall.
What I hate is that you're being a bully.
I'm not being a bully.
Oh, so going up and demanding things from nice people is what you consider normal, polite behavior?
I said please. Didn't I say please?
He asks in disbelief, looking back to his handler for confirmation. She purses her lips tightly, and something silent passes between them. When she doesn't come to his rescue, he throws up his hands.
Fine. Okay. Look,
Miss May, I interject. Her name's Miss May.
Miss May, he repeats.
A muscle twitches in his jaw.
I'm sorry for being forceful. It's been a long day.
It's barely 1 o'clock, I mutter.
Darian glares at me.
But I just want some free time at the con, you know? Just a few hours. And I won't have that with the signing. Could you please get your director on the walkie-talkie and tell him to find me? I'll be at the Starfield panel.
He looks back to me.
Working.
Then he turns on his heels and leaves. A flood of fans has amassed outside and tries to overtake him as he exits the office, but a beefy guy, probably his bodyguard, shields him from the fans and guides him and his handler through the lobby. The door closes behind them, successfully shutting out all the people crying his name. I roll my eyes and scowl. But Ms. May is grinning at me.
You really are your father's daughter.
He acted like I was invisible, I say. I just did what anyone would do.
Nope. That was all Robin.
She shakes her head. I worked with him for so many years, I can see when he comes out in you. You barely gave that boy a snowball's chance in hell.
He was being really rude to you, I point out.
Mm-hmm. Ms. May nods and swivels back and forth in her chair, picking up a walkie-talkie. She radios the new director, Herman Mitches, one of Dad's old buddies. Balding, beer gut, loves to cosplay as Chewbacca, about Darian Freeman before turning her attention back to me.
So, what can I do for you?
Well, I wring my hands. See, things happen and my passes were stolen. Two of them, for me and a friend. I have the receipt here, but the guy at the ticket booth said,
"Receipt?"
Miss May laughs, leaning back in her chair. Al, the daughter of Robin Whittemer never needs to buy a pass. You're part of this con, honey. You're family. From her desk, she draws out a badge. The top is marked yellow, the highest type of badge you can wear, the all-access kind that tells everyone else you're not just somebody, but you're somebody important. This is the Stan Lee of badges. She extends it to me and I take it, my fingers gliding over the black name printed at the bottom. Robin Whittemer. Tears sting my eyes.
We've printed one for him every year,
Miss May says.
Just in case you decided to come.
Every year? I ask, my voice distant. But
didn't your stepmother tell you?
Miss May frowns.
For the first few years, we sent them to your house. But when we kept getting them back, we just decided to keep them here.
So Catherine knew I was welcome at ExcelsiCon all this time. She knew I had a badge just for me, from my dad, every year and sent it back? I chew on my bottom lip, trying not to cry. I had no idea, I whisper. If I'd known... Miss May sees my face crumple and offers up a bowl full of butterscotch candies.
Well, you're here now, and your friend can wear this one,
she adds, taking out one of those extra badges I knew they had lying around for special guests.
What's the occasion anyway? Here to see the Starfield panel? Because I'm afraid you're missing it.
Actually, I'm here for the cosplay contest. She smiles, unwraps a butterscotch, and pops it in her mouth.
Your father's daughter, indeed.
Darian. You need to calm down, Dare. Thanks for that, Gale. Understatement of the century. We're walking out of the giant auditorium, away from the panel that just let out. Spots blink across my vision from the flash of a zillion selfies that people who just love me in Seaside couldn't wait to take. Even though if they really loved me, they would have not had the flash on. All the audience questions from the panel are swimming in my head like the insides of the blob. How do you feel being the new Commodore? What do you bring to Commodore that Mr. Singh didn't? Since filming just wrapped, can you tell us a little about what to expect from your take on Commodore? Why did you think you could be the Federation Prince? Jess didn't get those questions. Calvin didn't either. And every time Eamon got asked why he cast me as the Federation Prince, he would simply say, "Did I cast the perfect person for the role? I think I did." Which is, of course, Media Interviews 101. When you're asked a question you don't want to answer, you redirect it by asking your own question and answering that one instead. So between the blogger and the convention office and the panel, I'm in a pretty terrible mood. I can't believe I ran into the Rebel Gunner blogger. And it was a girl. Fate must be trolling me. Not even seeing Nathan Fillion will help this dark cloud over my head. That girl really got under your skin, didn't she? Gale says, shuffling behind me. Lonnie follows behind us like a hulking shadow. She wasn't a girl so much as the spawn of Satan, I mutter, opening the guests-only door to one of the private hallways. She had a point, you know, Lonnie rumbles. Gail nods.
Darian, you're usually so good with fans. Darian!
When I don't stop, she grabs me by the arm to halt me in the middle of the hallway. The dude from that demon show passes, and I give him a bro nod. When he's out of earshot, she whispers,
What's really wrong?
What's really wrong? A muscle in my jaw feathers. Gail, my phone is still missing, and I haven't gone this long without talking to L since we disagreed about the solar flux capacitor. Rebel Gunner is a girl, and I have a signing in less than... I checked my invisible watch. 10 minutes, where a guy who's left threatening messages at my hotel might or might not show up. Plus, and I know it's crazy, I can't shake the feeling that I'm being watched. I mean, I know I'm being watched, but this feels different. The same way I felt all throughout filming. Like when the guy locked me up on the roof and then those clips and photos got leaked. But I'll be there, Lonnie rumbles, cracking his knuckles. I'll turn them into sailor knots. Thanks, bro. I exhale a long, stressful breath. It'll be fine. Absolutely copacetic, as long as I don't sign anything that could be described as a mound.
L. I meet up with Sage in the lobby and crown her with the extra VIP badge, the same kind of badge I show to the ticket booth guy as we walk through the security line. His mouth falls open at the yellow band across the top of mine. Eat it, I mouth, and do the one finger at a time wave as the security guard checks my duffel and the costume and lets me inside.
Okay, so we need to finish up your costume and get you ready for this contest, Sage says, patting the strap of the badge. Still gotta make sure the stitching's right on your shoulder and glitter up your coat and...
Sage? I pull her to a stop. She hasn't even looked up at it all.
Yeah?
Oh. She stares out at the expanse of showroom floor. Her mouth goes slack-jawed.
Oh.
Floor to ceiling, spanning the entire convention center. TV network and studio and game booths line the walls. Life-size replicas of World of Warcraft characters and Funko figures. People with pleasant smiles staff the tables that stretch from one side to the other. Banners for Star Trek and Star Wars displayed overhead, waving gently in the air conditioning. The crowd shuffles around photo ops mid-aisle, snapping selfies with cosplayers wielding cardboard swords and scythes, lightsabers and phasers and star guns. A Deadpool bumps into me as he dodges out of the way of four Ewoks scuttling behind a mammoth Hulkbuster, their cell phones recording the event. And still no sign of the twins. Which is a good sign. Sage and I slowly turn our eyes to each other.
Holy shit, she says. I'm in nerd heaven.
Oh, young Padawan, I tell her, waving my hand toward the room. Everything the light touches is our kingdom. Let's go explore it. I pull her into the den of fantasy and sci-fi denizens, and we get lost in the shuffle.
God, look at all these people. So many Carmen doors. Do you think yours is here?
Maybe, I reply as we pass a booth selling Assassin's Creed robes.
Seriously? Are you going to meet up?
I don't know. He hasn't answered.
Hmm.
She nods toward a group of cosplayers gathered at the far corner of the showroom. One is holding a sign that reads, Team 4-Star.
Do a lot of internet groups meet up at conventions?
Sure.
How about your Starfield peeps? The online ones you talk to?
Oh, well, yeah. A few of them are here. We break apart for a moment as an elf with a scythe squeezes between us. Anyway, we should get to the costume contest area and sign in. What do you say? And try not to run into the twins.
If we do, I'll shove them in a closet, Sage mutters.
I laugh.
Ready to kick some Nox butt?
She scoffs.
Elle, I'm ready to tell them to get down on both knees and call you queen.
I thought you were going somewhere completely different with that.
This is a PG sort of moment.
Fair enough. She consults a convention map that she found on the showroom floor, but I take it from her with a scoff.
Oh, please, I know this place like the back of my hand.
Yeah, how do you know this place so well?
Because my dad started this con, I reply.
Grab her hand again and follow my feet into the crowd. The map of the convention floor burned into my memory, like the glow-in-the-dark stars on my bedroom ceiling.
Darian. Scrawling my name over another headshot of my character on Seaside Cove, I thank the pretty brunette for standing in line and hand the photo back to her. She hugs it to her chest like it's made of gold, tells me she loves me in Seaside, and hurries off with her friends. It's pretty amazing. I thought I'd be tired of fans gushing up to me, but there's just something earnest in fandom that's never boring. Sure, having fans inflates my ego, but I like to think that I'm not that shallow. I appreciate this job because I'm making things that people, all kinds of people, from the looks of my line, enjoy. So the blogger was right, I muttered to myself, tapping the end of the permanent marker on the table. It's annoying just how right she was. My time is way less important than making these people happy. Gale hovers just out of earshot, talking animatedly on the phone, setting up meetings and photo ops and all the things I'm too busy to handle. After all this, she deserves a break. Or a promotion. At the front of the line is Lonnie, looking as stoic and badass as ever. Even in a Powerpuff's Girl cap, he swiped from a nearby booth to make him look less suspicious. He keeps getting strange looks. A fan slides a book toward me, and I begin to say that I don't sign other people's work when I recognize the graphic novel. Batman Year One. I grip the marker, slowly turning up my eyes to a redhead in a Kilgrave t-shirt. He's taller than I remember, and older. Obviously. His hair close-cropped, eyes dark. My heart sinks. I sit back, capping the marker. Brian. Hey, Darian. Long time, yeah? I glance behind him. There are at least 20 people still waiting to get something signed. I can't just walk out now, and Gale has her back turned, so she can't see the trouble, even if I hulked out and waved Brian over my head by his foot. I have to keep my cool, which is hard, considering I want to punch him in the face. Instead, I nod and reply. Long time. Do you have something for me to sign? You know I don't sign other people's work. He licks his lips. The start of the Empire's insignia from Star Wars peeks up from the collar of his shirt. Of course he'd get the Empire's. He wasn't ever good enough for the Rebel Alliance. I just want to talk to you. Just for a minute. I've been trying to get in touch with you. I left voicemails at your hotel. That was you? I thought... I don't finish my sentence. Because what I thought was ridiculous. Of course it would have to be Brian. He smiles. Did you listen to them? Can't say I had the time, I say, trying to keep my voice steady. He makes an aggravated noise and squats so we're eye level. If that's not condescending, I don't know what is. Look, I didn't know they'd try to take you down like that. I thought it'd just be a quick piece in some small tabloid. I didn't think, like, People magazine would get a hold of it. He said I'd get to keep the money, and... I don't know, dude. I thought you were in on it. In on it? I can't believe this. In on what? You selling me out? It was a lot of money. You understand, right? You have to understand. I want to tell him off, but the fracking truth is that I do understand. I understand why he'd sell me out for paparazzi money. When someone gives you enough cash to cover a good chunk of your college tuition, you take it. And then there was me, the geeky son of self-crowned Hollywood royalty. We were outliers, so we became friends. So yeah, of course I understand him. I understand him better than I understand myself. That's what pisses me off the most. That he couldn't understand me the same way. Wasn't that what best friends were? He was like my brother. Brothers don't rat each other out. And yet, here we were. I looked down at my marker, twirling it in my fingers. Yeah, Brian. I understand. His face breaks open with relief. Oh, good. So listen, if we're cool and, like, friends again, I think... No. His eyebrows shoot up. But you just said... I'm not trying to be a dick. You were my best friend. I trusted you. The people behind him are getting restless. Gail is still yakking on the phone with whomever. It better be Mark, or I'm throwing all of her underwear in my mini-freezer tonight when we get back to the hotel. But Lonnie, he's zeroed in on us, arms crossed over his chest, waiting for me to give him a signal. He arches a strong black eyebrow. Do I want him to show Brian the door? Yes. Yes, I do. But that's not going to end things. I need to do that. I push his copy of Batman Year One back across the table. I forgive you, Brian, but I don't think we can be friends again. We both got our copies the first year we went to a con, before I ever became famous. We cosplayed as Carmendor and Yussi, and stood in line for 2 hours just to get David Singh's autograph on our old Starfield DVDs. It was the first time we really hung out outside of school. The weekend we became friends. The kind of friends that would become shoot-the-shit, drinking-beer in the back of pickups on the beach friends. The kind of friend that recorded my first audition tape that Dad... Mark, used to get me the role of Sebastian on Seaside Cove. The first con was the start of it. Then my life happened. Seaside Cove, then Starfield. Then suddenly, what I thought was true wasn't anymore. Who I wasn't anymore. And who I was to everyone else shifted, changed. Enjoy the rest of the con, I tell Brian, motioning for the next person to step up in line. Are you kidding me? Brian scoffs. You're going to give me that don't have time bullshit when you've been texting some random girl for the last month? I look at him sharply, and his eyebrows jerk up. He's surprised, caught off guard, and suddenly, it clicks. All those moments during filming, all my suspicions of being watched, I wasn't crazy. You, I say quietly, you were there. You locked me on the rooftop. You leaked those shots. My head spins. How did you even get on set? You haven't figured it out? His teeth gleam. All I had to do was drop Mark's name and no one would mess with me. Your costume director seems terrified of him. Oh, and by the way, he holds up something. My phone. Your handler left this behind. I lunge for it, but Brian yanks it away. Nah, not so fast. Because until like 10 minutes ago, I was gonna bring it to you as a peace offering. Even though you never answered my messages at the hotel. Look, I was busy shooting and... I reach for it again. Just give it back. But he doesn't. He's looking at the screen. Reading. "Elle's here, you know," he says. My stomach plummets. It must show on my face because Brian grins. "Don't worry. I'll let her know you're too busy to connect with friends." Before I can stop him, he types something out and drops my phone right into my lap. "You're welcome." Then he wraps his knuckles against the table and leaves, pushing his way through the crowd as a big guy squeezes in beside him and slides a Starfield poster onto the table for me to sign. I look at the phone. It's open to a text message, one sent to L. But I didn't send it. I swallow the rock in my throat. "Big fan! So excited for the movie!" gushes the guy. I slide my phone to the side, trying to be nonchalant so Brian can't get the benefit of rattling me, and uncap my marker. "Yeah? What are you excited about the most?" I swoop my signature across the bottom of the poster. "The observation deck," he says, grinning, "is nice this time of year." "Only on the south side of Metron," I reply, sliding the poster back. "Thanks for coming," I tell him, and look to the next fan. "Keep looking ahead. Keep looking ahead," I repeat the mantra to myself. "Don't ever look back." Finally, Lonnie lumbers over and hovers until Brian slinks away out of the line. He stays in my peripheral vision for a while until my bodyguard cracks his knuckles. Finally, Brian disappears. I hope for the last time. Maybe that's what fame does. It corrupts everything around you until even your best friends see you more as a name than as a person. A commodity instead of an individual. Maybe that's just my life now. But then, what about Elle? Will the same thing happen when she finds out who I am? She already hates Darian Freeman, but will she hate me, too? As I look up at the guy who used to trade Pokemon cards with me behind the cafeteria dumpsters, I begin to wonder if I really want to take that chance again. It'll only end up the same way. Maybe worse now. Maybe worse because I actually have feelings for Elle. Deep feelings. And I realize that's what Gale was trying to warn me about. Not because Elle is a stranger or because she might be a bad person, but because she's normal. She's like everyone else. And like everyone else, she couldn't possibly understand. Gale finally gets off the phone and wanders back to me. "How are we doing?" she asks happily. I strain a smile. "We're doing great." I show her my phone. "Found it." The last message I sent, that Brian sent, is harsh. A hard farewell. But the thing is, and this is what kills me, it's right. I can't see her anymore. What did Elle say? That this was the impossible universe? I had scoffed at that, but now I'm not so sure it's silly. My life is impossible. My luck is impossible. And me and Elle? Together? That's probably the most impossible thing of all. Gale gasps. "No way! Where was it?" "Park it," I lie. Gale wilts with relief. "Thank God," she straightens. "Well, you ready?" "Ready for..." I try to keep my vision straight as I welcome another fan toting what looks like an action figure of me. Good God, I'm an action figure now. "The whole point of this con?" Gale shakes her head and takes me by the elbow. "Come on, Carmendor. You've got a contest to judge."
L. I smooth the yards and yards of night sky fabric to disguise my trembling hands. Through the smudges in the mirror, sage frets with my hair. It never does what anyone wants it to do. And today is no exception. It's not staying in its braid at all. When a lock falls out again, she throws up her hands. "I'm sorry," I say. I should have warned you my hair sucks. I try to thread my fingers through the strands to remove the rest of the braid, but they wrap around my fingers, and the more I tug, the knottier the knots get.
10 minutes, yells a stagehand. All contestants to the wings, in order.
Sage curses. The other Amaras and UCs and Carmendors, some gender-bent, some AU, some strictly canon, shuffle around us and out of the bathroom until only one other Amara cosplay remains. I wonder if my Carmendor is in the lot. He has to be, right? He has to be in a contest or on a panel here or something. Otherwise, he never would have texted me about the con in the first place. The other Amara fixes her black lipstick in the mirror and pauses. She glances over.
Oh my gosh. I'm sorry. This is probably super creepy, but are you the girl who writes Rebel Gunner?
Yeah. I'm too shocked to be embarrassed.
Oh my god. I love your blog. I loved it before it got popular.
She envelops me in a hug, even though I don't know her at all. Is she a commenter or just a reader? Does it matter? It feels like a real hug. Friendly. I hug her back.
I recognized you from your avatar. I hope that's not weird.
She steps back and looks at my costume. Yards and yards of Amara's fabric, and the scraps of my father's jacket as the shoulder pads, golden tassels dangling.
Is this your costume? The one you were talking about in your post?
I hesitate. Sort of. My dad's and my mom's. Kind of a mashup. It doesn't matter, though. This is all just so cool, I say, motioning out of the bathroom to the larger con. It's everything Dad hoped it would be. A thoughtful look crosses the girl's face.
Your dad?
He started at ExcelsiCon, I reply.
Well, one of the people who did. Wait, you're Robin Whittemer's daughter?
Yeah, I nod.
He would have loved your outfit, by the way. I mean, it's amazing. You look like Amara. Thank you, but...
She flicks her eyes down the length of my costume, from the torn uniform to the broken Starwing badge to the noticeable lack of a crown, and then, to my utter surprise, she plucks her own crown from her head.
There.
She rests it on my brow.
Better.
What? I touch it gingerly.
I can't take this. She holds up a hand. Don't say no. I've been coming to this con for years. I love it. So consider it a thank you.
In the mirror, behind my mess of hair, Sage's face flickers. I wait for her to complain about a new crown throwing off her whole look. But instead, she snaps her fingers.
That's it,
she cries.
What's it?
She digs a pack of makeup removal wipes out of her bag.
Wipe that makeup off. I've got a new idea.
But shh, we're against the clock. The contest starts in literally 10 minutes. Then she turns to our new friend.
Do you think you can get us a Starwing? Or maybe a gold rubber band? I can get you more than that. She replies and hurries out of the bathroom.
I give Sage a strange look. What are you doing?
Do you trust me?
Is that a trick question?
Do you trust me? She enunciates slowly.
What can I say? Yes, of course. Behind her, the bathroom door bangs open, bringing in a flood of Carmendors and Amaras and UCs and Nox Kings. So many Starfield characters crowding around me. Some I recognize from the message boards, new faces and old. They pick off pieces of themselves, handing them to Sage.
If it wasn't for Mr. Whittemer, I hear them say, this was the first con I ever went to. For the first time in my life. Felt like I belonged. Thanks to your dad.
My dad. My dad. I smile at all the cosplayers handing over bits and pieces of their costumes, because otherwise I might cry. They're just small things. Amara's gloves, licorice-colored earrings in my ears, even a sticky star under my left eye.
Because in the Black Nebula, she's galactic, says a petite girl with a wink.
And then, through the throng of people, an Amara with dark hair and purple glasses pushes through. I do a double take. Oh, holy bat nipples, no. It's Calliope. We lock eyes. Cal stares at me, frozen as though she's just been ejected into space. She's wearing such an expensive cosplay gown. It's Princess Amara to the works, the best money could buy. It fits her beautifully. A deep blue with inlaid sequins and a draping neckline. Silver metal shoulder pads and clasped at her breast a brooch in the shape of star wings. I'm sure she doesn't understand what any of it means. The chattering crowd goes quiet. Sage freezes mid-braid. Cal steps up and looks at my dress. The dress she was supposed to wear. And the jacket that Chloe tore apart. And her eyes water. It looks so much better on you, she whispers. Where's Chloe? My voice warbles.
Out in the audience. She wants to get the best view for when...
She hesitates.
I'm so sorry, Elle. I didn't think Chloe would go this far. She just... She really wants to be famous. She wants to be someone.
She is someone, Sage snaps. She's the queen of awful.
Cal looks at her helplessly.
She really isn't that bad.
She is. Sage folds her arms. And you just go along with it.
Cal blinks. And then, after a moment, she shakes her head. She takes a deep breath and says, I'm so sorry, Elle. I think these are yours, too. They're really tight on me, and... She lifts her dress and steps out of my mother's sparkling starlight shoes. I think they'll fit you better. Hesitantly, I slip out of the black flat Sage let me borrow and slide them on, 1 foot at a time. And for a moment, I'm back in the living room, waltzing around on my dad's feet as he twirls me, around and around. And Mom's dress made of starlight and universes and love sewn into the seams. The shoes fit perfectly.
Contestant 42, calls a stagehand, poking her head into the bathroom. You're on next. Hurry up.
Sage looks me square in the eye.
You ready, princess?
I think so.
Good.
She finishes wrapping my hair into the crown and snaps back her hands.
Take her away.
I glance over at Cal one last time. And she gives me a small wave before the stagehand spirits me out of the bathroom. I dodge a long-eared knock. I don't have time to look in the mirror, to look at what Sage and the other cosplayers did to me. I just know that she took the knots in my hair and folded them into the crown. And there are pieces of costumes on me that aren't mine, and glitter on my starched tailcoat that sheds like stardust as I'm pulled down the hallway, the folds of the universe billowing around me. My face feels too light. Not enough makeup. There's too much of me. I can't be Princess Amara. We pass the contestants that just went on, and they turn to look at me with strange, thoughtful looks. I try to ask if there's something wrong, but the stagehand just keeps pulling me forward. And then we're at the mouth of the stage, and the MC shouts,
Contestant 42, the Black Nebula Federation Princess Amara.
Go. Whispers the stagehand, and she nudges me gently. My feet take the lead. One step, then another. My mother's starlight slippers echo across the stage like glass against the ground.
Chin up, Elle,
I hear Dad's voice say in my ear.
Look to the stars. Aim.
My hands fall out of their fists. My shoulders ease back, straight. Relaxed. I'm half of my father. half of my hero. And I am half of my mother. Half soft sighs and half sharp edges. And if they can be Carmendor and Amara, then somewhere in my blood and bones I can be too. I'm the lost princess. I'm the villain of my story and the hero. Part of my mom and part of my dad. I am a fact of the universe, the possible and the impossible. I am not no one. I am my parents' daughter. And then I realize that in this universe, they're alive too. They're alive through me. Fashioning my hands into a pistol, I pointed at the ceiling, lifting my chin, raising my eyes against the blinding stage lights, and I ignite the stars.
Darian. It's her eyes. The way she looks at you, like you've got all the time in the world, and yet you're still running out. Her gaze is steady, her shoulders held high, even though she's carrying the weight of the Federation on them. Her hair glows red, like the body of a dying sun, snarled and wild around the golden crown. As she walks, slow and steady, the clip of her sparkling heels on the stage, her dress swirls around her, fluttering, yards and yards of universe wrapped around her curves and edges. Her mouth, thin with determination, sits against her pale face like a rigid dark line. She comes to a stop in the center and raises her hand in the form of a phaser, aiming it to the sky, and then lifts her eyes to me. Her gaze strikes a familiar chord, but I can't for the life of me think where I've seen it. I think it's from the show, from the princess herself, the way her shoulders ease back and her chin rises. Defiant, like in the final episode. She's wearing Princess Amara's ball gown, like the one Jess wore in that scene where we danced in the ashes for 8 hours. But this Amara is a little different, a little changed. Just a step to the side. What Amara would look like, perhaps, on the other side of that great black nebula. Not just a princess, but the commander of the Prospero, the captain of her own life, with Carmendor's jacket draped over her shoulders. The collar crisp, the coattails starched and flaring behind her, the tips glimmering with a dusting of gold like a comet tail. Her jacket, of a blue you see at dusk, a hue that makes you wish you could fly off into it, is the perfect shade. The right shade. The brass buttons along it are polished, gleaming. Not because they're new, but simply from being cared for. The star wings pinned on her lapel glimmer in the stage lights. This is Amara. The true Amara. The one Carmendor fell in love with. The one he would have looked back at 2 seconds earlier. She makes me remember why I fell in love with Starfield. The hypothesis that in every universe, in every world, there is a Carmendor and an Amara. In any universe, in any world, as anyone, we are them. They are us. I glance over at the other two judges. They gape at her, enthralled. I begin to grin. Right? I want to tell them. My thoughts exactly.
L. The moment I walk off stage, I shake out all my limbs, trying to get the nervous sizzle out of them. I feel like I just touched a live wire. But I actually did it. I walked out there. I stared up at the judges, blind as a freaking bat, and hoped like hell I made eye contact with at least one of them. And I sort of hoped Darian Freeman didn't recognize me. "Your Highness!" Sage Whisper yells, throwing herself at me. We hug,
and she prances, throwing her arms in the air.
That was stellar. You were stellar. Everything was stellar. There were some other good ones, but oh God, I'm feeling good about this. Really good.
You are? Because I think I blacked out, I whisper back. Do you think Chloe recognized me?
She didn't, says Cal's voice. She's behind us, hovering.
I texted her at the last minute about an emergency with my costume, so she had to leave the theater. There's a good chance she won't be getting back in.
I look at Cal, full of surprise and gratitude. Thank you.
Don't, she shakes her head. I really don't deserve it. It'll take a long time before I do.
Contestants, the stagehand calls us all back toward the stage.
Sage hugs me one last time and whispers, good luck, before I'm ushered back into the bright, glaring lights. I glance at her in the wings, unable to stop the grin spreading across my face. And in that moment, I sort of realize it doesn't matter if I win. We made it this far. We competed. And nothing can take that away.
Third place goes to a UC, who looks exactly like the movie promos. Not me. I knew it wouldn't be me, but still, I had a little hope. It was a good run. When I glance back at Sage, how come she's smiling? Does she know something I don't?
It's just the residual high of competing. There's 43 of us and only 3 winners. Cal stands beside me, nervously twitching.
I hate this, Cal whispers. It reminds me of tennis tournaments.
My dad used to say it was the best feeling in the world. I look out over the crowd, my heart thundering in my ears and lungs expanding in short, frantic puffs.
Cal looks at me strangely.
What? This?
Being your favorite character. I don't care if I win. I'm just glad I'm here, I whisper back.
I wish I'd known him better, she says, picking at her nails.
I wish I knew Starfield better.
I can teach you, I offer. She looks over at me.
Yeah?
Yeah. Sage and I both can. A blush tinges her cheeks. I wouldn't mind that.
It must be a strange thing to say because she's just about to ask another question. Her face twisted in concern when the MC cries,
second place goes to number 42, the Black Nebula Federation Princess Amara.
The crowd cheers. I don't hear him at first, like my ears didn't register those sounds in that order. But then Cal elbows me and jerks her head toward the front. Her lips move around the words, that's you.
That's me?
I look back toward the audience, the crowd. They're cheering so loudly it rattles in my ribcage. The MC gives me a patient smile, nudging his head toward the front of the stage. I take one step. Every great journey always begins with one, doesn't it? All it takes is one. Then another. And another.
Congratulations!
The MC cries, handing me the prize. 2 tickets to the cosplay ball. 2nd place prize. 2nd place. I clutch the tickets tightly to my chest.
The MC takes the last card from the envelope and looks down at it. His eyebrows jerk up into his hairline. And 1st place, with a $500 prize and exclusive tickets to the premiere of Starfield, is number 17, Princess Carmendor.
From the other side of the lineup, a cosplayer gathers up her tattered Federation uniform dress and sways up to retrieve her prize, waving to the audience. Even without her crown, she still napped first. That's good cosplay. Fantastic cosplay. Gender-bending Carmendor. She was amazing. I clap with the rest of them, smiling. The judges come out from the wings to congratulate us. I'm in a daze, trying to soak in everything, but at the same time just trying to keep breathing. I didn't win. I don't have the cash prize. I'm not going to L.A. But I look down at the golden tickets in my hand and my eyes begin to tear up.
the cosplay ball.
Good job,
says a deep voice. It sounds familiar. I glance over. Darian Freeman.
You were amazing. I mean, that costume. You did a good job. I mean, a good job. Thank you. I mean...
Knox got your tongue, I say before I can stop myself. His eyes widen. His hands go slack.
You're the girl from the office. Rebel Gunner.
There's a strange control to his voice that makes me want to both apologize for calling him spoiled and scold him for treating Ms. May like an idiot. Instead, I just ease a smile onto my lips. He was one-third of my second-place vote, after all.
Glad you didn't try and chicken out of this, too.
His eyes darken, and his lips twist slightly downward, as if he's about to say something incredibly bratty, when Sage slings her arm across my shoulder and the other cosplayers, Nox Knight, and Steampunk UC and Lord Dragnaut, Episode 3, minor character, along with a rainbow of others, flood around me with promise-sworn cries of joy. How come I feel like I won even though I didn't? Sage pulls me into a hug.
Second? Yeah, I can take second.
So, who's your date? Cal asks, nudging her chin toward the tickets.
For the ball.
I don't know. I chew the inside of my cheek. I mean, I guess I figured Sage would...
Oh, no,
Sage interrupts.
You're relishing your winnings. Besides, I don't have a costume, duh.
Sage will be too busy hanging out with me, Cal blurts out. I barely understand what she says. Sage's mouth drops open.
She stammers.
And then she blushes beneath already rouged cheeks. My stepsister turns to her.
I mean, what do you say? Maybe we could grab a bite? If you want to.
She stares at the ground. With me, I mean. Sage's mouth is moving, but nothing's coming out. So I help her along and press the heel of my starlight slipper onto her toes. I must kickstart her brain because she yelps.
Yes! I mean, like a date? I mean, yeah. That'd be cool.
And then she smiles, her eyes trained on Cal like she's the North Star. Cal smiles.
Cool.
Then, as if remembering her other half, or sense an evil, who knows, she glances into the crowd.
Elle, you might want to hurry off before Chloe comes up here. I know she's on her way.
Let her come, Sage juts out her chin. I'll punch her in the face.
No, I think I should just go, I say. Thank you again, I say to Cal, even though she'll just tell me that she doesn't deserve to be thanked. Which might be true, but I'm half my mom, and my mom was always kind and always thankful, and my dad would want me to be like her. Sage hands over my duffel bag, and I pick up my dress, hurrying out of the throng of people. I know Carmendor hasn't responded since last night, but I've been too busy with the con. I can't imagine who else I'd bring to the ball. In the bathroom, I drop my bag and splash water on my face. When I look up, a terrible thought strikes me. What if he says no? The girl in the mirror, with the crown of stars knotted in messy hair, with her mascara bleeding, and her hand-me-down cosplay jacket and her mother's dress, whom no one wanted. No one ever wanted. Not since Dad died. But at this con, surrounded by the makings of my dad's dream, maybe he'll say yes. Maybe at this con, the worlds are colliding, and nothing is impossible. I reach into my duffel bag, building up the courage to ask him. Even if he says no, it'll be all right. Even if he doesn't want to meet me, I'll understand. But as I take out my phone, I see there's a message already waiting for me. Carmendor, 1:47 p.m.
I'm sorry, Elle. I don't think we should talk anymore.
My excitement, my anticipation, my hopefulness,
slowly slide down to rest like a lump of coal.